Hey there, it's JVL. On The Secret Show with Sarah Longwell today, we talked about Joe Biden's big State of the Union night. We talked about the very, very strange energy from Katy Britt. We talked a little bit about Katy Porter, then some Beyonce. I'm not going to lie, this is a banger of a show. Strap in.
Sat up straight, and I said, Oh, look. There he is. It was top notch from start to finish, including the actual car crash, train wreck, plane in flames follow up delivery by Katy Britt in her rebuttal.
That's a whole separate topic. Let's talk about her afterwards.
All right. So, JVL, now it's my turn to say, yeah. I want to put a quarter in the machine and I want to let it run. Go ahead, baby boy.
I mean, I'm not surprised. If you recall, we did a State of the Union last year, and Biden was awesome. And so we did it again this year, and Biden is awesome. And at some point, don't we all just go, oh, actually, he's very good at this? Character is destiny, right? And Joe Biden's character is that he loves this shit. And more than that, he loves almost all of those people in the room. And it comes through, right? This is he is such a classic politician in that way, in that he draws energy from other people. He genuinely likes other people, and he even genuinely likes people who don't like him. He's just, that's how he is. And did you see the reaction shot he had with Marjorie Taylor Greene as he was coming in?
I did.
And he's coming in and he sees her and she's dressed like she is at a monster truck rally and she's just super into Gravedigger or something, right? She's got the MAGA hat and the MAGA blaze. She's wearing pins. She does not look like a grown-up professional adult.
It's amazing.
Looks at her and Biden's reaction is to point at her and do a sort of double take, whoa, as if it's awesome. As if he is blown away by her commitment to the bit. And when you pan to her face, she doesn't know how to take it, right? Because she's expecting him to scowl. And Biden just thinks, like, hey, man, that's America. How awesome is this? And when people are booing him during the
wait, can he loves his that. Reaction, his face said, look at you. Look at you here. Marjorie, you look funny.
But also as if he was genuinely amused by it in a good-natured way. Not laughing, not looking down on her, but like, hey, this is all part of life's rich pageant. Isn't that awesome? And, you know, when I don't know what the Republicans thought was going to happen when they started booing him. Because, again, Biden feeds off this stuff because he doesn't get angry or embarrassed. He's one of these people who, and I'm not like this. This is what, you know, I am not in politics. Who takes this sort of stuff and it is like, yeah, come on, let's do it. I like a little give and take, you know, hey, let's, he likes that. And so he's like giving it back to them, but again, not in the I'm going to dominate you way, but in the this is how it's supposed to be way. And man, when that comes through, I don't think this is just me, Johnny from Jersey, Biden's super fan. I think that is very attractive to people. Now, it may not be very attractive to the MAGA types, but although I do think it unsettles them, because that's not the mode of politics they're used to. They're used to a strong man looking to dominate people. And the idea of a guy who, you know, or they're used to the Obama mode, which is this Vulcan, you know, super serious. Biden is just different from both of them. By a lot. He's much closer to Bill Clinton than he is to either of them. George W. Bush wasn't all that far from Clinton in that way. He wasn't as pure a political animal as Clinton was. But Biden just liked that. So on the substance, it was a campaign speech, basically. He did all of the stuff that we want him to do on immigration. I thought it was very effective. But he used a locution that other people that he's used once or twice before that I think is going to be very effective. So, I mean, he talked about Trump being as old as he was, which is funny. But then he talked, he said, it's not how old you, it's not the age of the person, it's the age of their ideas. And this is a very, I think it's a very shrewd way to frame it, right? Because it talks to progress and change. And what he's saying is, you know, Trump is just all of these old ideas. I think that is, again, in an environment where people, you know, like we've been doing, how many change elections have we had in a row now, Sarah? Six of them, seven of them. I think that's useful. I don't know. I looked at it and I'm like, yes, this is why I've always said that, you know, all due respect to Gretchen Whitmer, Biden is the best available candidate. He could certainly lose to Trump, but I think he can also beat Trump. And he's good. He's just good. He's good at presidenting and he's good at this stuff. And I, you know what? Totally comfortable with him debating Trump. I don't think Trump wants to debate him after this. It was awesome. It was awesome. There. So, am I wrong? Am I? I'm trying to view this objectively as a what does the median person take from it?
Well, I don't know. You're a fanboy, and that's good. That's good. That's your thing. He needs some of them. I'm more of a skeptic, often, especially of. You know, I listen to voters talk about the age question. And so sure. I know it's real across the political spectrum, the concerns about that. I'm watching, you know, the absence of there being sort of surrogates out there willing to defend him, be part of his echo chamber, which feels like not a vote of confidence. And obviously I was rooting for him. Right. And I tend to be, as somebody who does things in public and often gets like pretty afraid, like for big moments. I remember when Sarah Palin was walking across to give her first VP speech and she was in high heels on that slick, slick floor. And I just stood there being like, please don't fall. Please don't fall. Like, I just want people to be okay generally. And so I felt that way last night. Like, I was rooting for him. But I was genuinely impressed. And let me just say, I'm not like, I don't have blinders on. Like, he was often talking too fast to be like clearly understood. There was a couple of lines that he needed to hit, like the women's reproductive rights things that he kind of garbled. You know, it wasn't like he had no moments where he wasn't quite, getting the line perfectly clear. But the problem for Republicans, and it's not just that they miss. It's not just that they misunderstimate him. That's your word, right? It's not just that they underestimate him. It's that they set bars for him. And the bar is dementia. The bar is senility. The bar is Weekend at Bernie's not alive. And so last night, watching Republicans be like, he's talking too loud and too fast. I'm like, oh. You are upset because what you want to say is look at this doddering old man. And instead you're like, he's too juiced. He's got too much energy. He's too loud. Okay. Cry more, guys. Cry more. He cleared the bar by so high that like expectations matter. Expectations really do matter. And the expectations were low. And so he just, it was like out of the ballpark. And that might not, if he was Bill Clinton, that wouldn't have been considered a speech for the ages. But for Biden, with the stakes as high as they are, because here's what people want to see from Biden. Mm-hmm. They want to know that Biden understands the stakes of this election. I think all the hand-wringing from Democrats and the step-asides and the can he do it is like, you may have noticed Donald Trump is the alternative here, and we feel very nervous about an 81-year-old man being our candidate, especially one that doesn't seem like he goes out in public that much and can go toe-to-toe with this fascist lunatic.
Although and I think last night, over the last 2 weeks, Biden has been out in public a lot
more. He has. No, he has. The things are shifting. But last night, instead of like the slow shifting of a big cruise liner, it was like a sharp turn of, whoa. And here's the thing. You noted the way that he mixes it up with Republicans. But I think what was interesting to me is that he was giving a fiery type campaign speech where the substance was for the base. The substance was very much for Democrats. Mm-hmm. But the tone was for sort of swing voters who are worried he's too old, right? And so he was giving them what they needed to be like, oh, that guy's there. He's with it. He seems, but also he did seem like sort of, it was a little bit angry at times in the way campaign speeches were, or not even angry. He was going, he went right at the Supreme Court. He went right at the Republicans. Mm. He was going on offense. But when he smiles at them, when he makes the jokes about his own age, being self-deprecating, and Lindsey Graham laughs, when he had that moment where he was going on offense on immigration and he was like, we put together the toughest bill and whatever. And they started booing him. And he's like, oh, you don't think so. You don't think so, huh? Those are good, good moments for him. And they are disarming. Republicans did not know what to do with themselves. They don't know what to do with themselves this morning. They're somewhere between like, what was it? Angry partisan speech.
Okay. So we have not seen a president who can work in that mode in a long time.
Yeah.
Right. Obama was certainly not like that. Trump was certainly not like that. It's been more than a decade since we've had an American president who takes that particular approach to the opposition. So here is what, again, and I could talk to you in my Biden fanboy hat, but I'm not wearing that hat. I'm wearing the JVL is always right hat. These are different hats.
It's technically a shirt, but go on.
If you were to pull together a focus group of your double doubters or your double haters or your pox on both their housers.
Yeah.
And first you were to ask them, but say, hey, so tell me what you think about Biden's age. And you let them all have their say. And then you were to show them that speech and just sit with them. And then afterwards say, so what do you guys think about the age stuff? I think it would have moved a couple of them. And that's why I say that I think it's effective, right? The single biggest liability he has is age. The group he needs to do well with are the double doubters. And I think this puts that to bed, or at least begins to move the needle on that with some percentage of those double doubters. And that makes it a successful speech.
Yeah, I don't think it puts it. It does. I don't think it puts it to bed. This is a moment in time. But here's one of the things that I think it really accomplished. I agree that for the double doubters, like it gave them something to chew on, and maybe relieved some of the doubt. To me, one of the biggest things that it did, though, you know, me and my surrogate kick. I'm always talking about the surrogates and the bench. They need to be out there for him. And my sense of their reluctance, the reason we haven't been seeing people who are willing to sort of own Biden's economy and go out and stump for him and put all their energy, their clout, their capital behind him is they don't want that sort of 35-40% approval rating stink all over them.
Right.
And I do think last night he gave them a leadership cover, right? Where they could be like, no, you can go out 100%. And defend me and feel good about it. You can go out on my behalf. Because I was watching the Democrats in the room, you could see the energy just move in their directions. Republicans looked like their sphincters were so tight at watching him come out strong. And the Democrats were loose. They were laughing. They were cheering. They were standing up. And Republicans did themselves no favors by staying in their chairs the whole time because they just looked kind of like, they looked a little lumpy sit there.
Yeah.
Exactly. They did look trapped. And so I think Biden set a tone where things now can start to improve. I think Pete looked ready to go run through a wall for Biden.
Yeah.
And he needed that. He needed to rally his troops. He needed to bring people to his side.
I will remind people, Biden does keep doing this. He gave a great speech on democracy when he was doing his October 7 stuff. He gave three fantastic set pieces on October 7. So this isn't like, oh, well, he rolled double sixes once. You know, he's good.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that I think speeches are his strongest suit. I do think when he does these State of the Unions, though, you do get the sense he's like, this is my house. I grew up here. I live here. You guys are my pals. I see a lot of faces.
Ray Lewis at the Ravens Stadium.
Yeah. And that was the other thing. You know, he looked like he was having fun.
Yes.
You know, one of the things Trump does,
I think he was actually having fun.
I think that's right. Yeah. But feeling that, you know, when Trump does his thing and he does his goofy dance and he goes up to, you know, tell all his stem winders and his little bits, the fact is the people at those rallies, it's like Red Solo Cup fun, you know? Yeah, it's politics, but it's also, it's us, it's community. And I'm going to make it sound nicer than it is, but like, this is why people go, is to feel like they're with people that are, like, you know, of their tribe. And yeah. And I just think Biden last night having fun, showing both the stakes, but also the lightness, man, that is the right balance, and people can follow that. It sets a tone. Yeah, man. I don't know. I thought it was really good. Do you want to talk?
Feel good about him? We'll get to Katie Brett in a minute.
I want to talk about Mike Johnson really quick.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Did you watch Mike Johnson?
My boy looked like he was 12 years old sitting at the grown-ups table and not quite sure what to do.
I don't know why I feel this way. No, I just thought he needed like a paint pail. Like he was like, he did. There's something like there. I don't know what. Yeah, man, go get your shine box, kid. Like and it was weird because
you're not ready for the bigs.
You're not ready. He did not know what to do with his face.
Yeah.
And so out of the gate. So one of the things Biden did really well is he went out of the gate with Ukraine. And I can see from a Republican-based standpoint, they don't like this at all. Because this is America. You're not doing America first. You're talking about Ukraine. But Mike Johnson agrees with him, actually, on Ukraine, even though he's not doing... But he does. And so he was nodding and then, like, kind of got used to nodding. Yeah. And then Biden transitions into, like, January 6th. And you can see him, like, short-circuiting, not knowing what to do. Yeah. And so... I thought that was because, you know, Kevin McCarthy sat behind Biden last time and just sneered and jeered and said no and reacted. And Mike Johnson was just like sort of bobbleheading, sometimes smirky, but like he was never quite in sync with what Biden was saying.
It really was like a, you know, a single A player dropped in the middle of a big league game. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. You know what? Sitting next to Kamala Harris. She looked statesmanlike.
She did.
And serious and like a grown-up. Do you think our friends, hi Bill, are finally going to be comfortable with the fact that Joe Biden is the nominee, Joe Biden's going to be the nominee, and also Joe Biden is the best deal you're going to get? Because I don't know what else to say. Like, this is the best deal we're going to get. It's not a sure thing. My God, it should be a sure thing. He should be up by 15 points and running away with it. But he's not, because that's not the world we live in. And so understanding that whoever we have is going to be somewhere between a 55 and a 45% chance to save democracy, I would rather be riding with Biden than anybody else.
So I'm looking at Bill's Twitter right now. He hasn't tweeted in almost 23 hours. I don't know why. I felt this way about many people. I was like, Ezra Klein, will you tweet? I would like to just know what you think about this, please. In a genuine way, because I think Ezra Klein was making not, he was sharing an anxiety with actually sort of an affirmative, he was trying to be like, here's what would happen if he stepped aside, and here's how it would work at convention. And so he was kind of doing the work to really lay out how this would go. But I do feel like just like the 2022, and look, I was not a fan of this, but just like the 2022 elections basically went from, well, of course, Biden's not going to run for second term, to like, oh no, he probably is now. This is sort of like, yeah, guys, everybody, I do think this is the other thing, right? The drip, drip, drip of op-eds being like, his poll numbers are too low, everything's bad. You know, I don't think he's going to get a 10-point bump out of this, but I do think things are going to start to shift a little bit. And more than anything, it is going to silence. Like, nobody's going to write that op-ed now for a while. Like, they're just not.
Don't say that until you've read Morning Shots today.
I know. I can't wait to read Bill's newsletter.
Bill, I kid because I love. Okay, so...
And there's a bulwark split over this.
I think I've been perfectly restrained and gracious about all this. Would you agree?
Yeah, I'm surprised you're not wearing your shirt. Your JBL's always right shirt.
So,
wait, but can I actually say something on the rightness?
Yeah.
I swear to God, it was like Biden was listening to our podcast. Because let me just tell you, he would did two. We have two main pieces of feedback, you and I. And they're different. Yours is about hanging the lantern on the age, right? It's mm-hmm. about leaning into it, making jokes about it, not running away from it, not trying to pretend it's not there. Boom. He did that last night. He did it. Mine is about offense, right? You got to go on offense. You got to have the energy, knife in your teeth. I'm in that big Evan Osnos New Yorker thing that he wrote, Profile of Biden. I'm in there talking about how Democrats have got to, you know, they need their own echo chamber. They need to have a knife in their teeth. They got to go on offense on messaging. And last night, man, Biden found the knife. He put it in his teeth and he went for it. And so I'm just convinced. I think they listened to us. No, I think they listen to us. I think they take our advice. Well, no, I'm just kidding. They don't listen to us.
Evan called. Evan listens to you. Evan didn't call me. Nobody ever asked me what I think about this. No, this is the funny thing, actually. I am very sure that people within the White House pay attention to the poll work.
Oh, yeah. Me too.
You wouldn't know it from reading the New York Times, where everything is always terrible. And they did you catch, by the way? I'm sorry. I need to do 90 seconds on this. The New York Times explainer on who Mark Robinson is.
No. Did they copy JVL?
No. It was classic New York Times both sidesism. Like, you know, oh, he's just a fiery, fiery independent thinker. You know, it is wild how aggressively stupid that paper is being. And I am a big New York Times defender and I love him. Okay, back onto the main track. Okay, so let's go to the other big story, which I am surprised. Last night, we saw one of the worst manipulations and intrusions into American politics ever, because Elise Stefanik created a deep fake of Katie Britt and got every single network in America to use that instead of covering Katie Britt's actual statement as her Republican response. And the fact that this has gone to everybody just bought it hook, line, and sinker is stunning to me. And, you know, it's a dirty, dirty trick. And it's a sign that AI is changing American politics in ways that we have not figured out yet.
That's a good bit. I like it.
Thank you. Holy crap,
dude. It is.
She so talked herself off the ticket last night, right?
So you know that, you know, because you're on the next level with me, that this has been my, I have
yes,
put
Katie I am on the next level with you. We're on it together, Sarah.
And I'm on it with you. This is and, just a normal
Evan
thing to
Osnos
say.
Evan Osnos called oh you and not me.
Oh my God, I know. Your insecurity is off the charts this morning. You're having a good day. Just be in your good day. It's okay. It's okay. TV media, if you're listening, JVL wants to talk to you. My God. Wait, what was I about to say with Katie Britt? I really thought. I've been like, this is my, I've been spreading this around. And to be fair, actually, somebody in my office floated this first. And like Don Draper, I stole this idea and I've been running with it. Because as soon as I heard it, I was like, this is right. That's what the money is for. Anyway, so... anyway, so this idea, though, that Katie Britt is like central casting, that she's normie enough, but also sort of pliant enough, which, by the way, last night showed that she sure is pliant enough. She is willing to sacrifice all her dignity on the altar of being Trump's VP. But I really thought she had a shot, and I will never say that again. It's over. I mean, yeah. RIP her chances for being on the ticket, because that was an implosion of credibility like I've never seen. And part of it was that it was like your bit is dead on, and that it felt like a parody. Like you're watching it and it starts and you're like, wait, what is happening right now?
This feels wrong.
Is this real?
Yeah, I have expected to see her have like six fingers when she lifted the, you know, like the AI tell. Everything about it was so wrong. I think the general consensus was she's like a drama kid, but a drama kid who is really bad at acting.
Yeah, it's like something you'd see on a TV show where the story they're telling is about an overwrought drama girl.
And it was But here's what I think is real. Here's what I think sinks her with Trump. Two things. Hey again, it's JVL. The conversation goes on from there. This is one of the best shows we've done in a long while. If you want to hear the rest of it, head on over to Bulwark Plus and subscribe. We'd love to have you.